here, the lobby was a doze. From the bar beyond the gift shop, night and day gave way to a lazy and introspective version of Stardust.
"Driver's license," the desk clerk agreed in that same sighing, wondering voice.
"Good. Are you supposed to write anything down?"
"No. Mr. Van Wyck rented the room. All I need is to check your... May I hold the turtle, ma'am?"
"No," Susanna said, and the desk clerk began to weep. Susanna observed this phenomenon with amusement. She didn't believe she had made so many people cry since her disastrous violin recital, both first and last, at the age of 12.
"No, I may not hold it," the desk clerk said, weeping freely. "No, no, I may not hold it. Ah, Discordia, I may not—"
"Hush up your snivel," Susanna said, and the desk clerk hushed at once. "Give me the room key, please." But instead of a key, the Eurasian woman handed her a plastic card in a folder. Written on the inside of the folder, so would-be thieves couldn't easily see it, presumably, was the number 1919. Which didn't surprise Susanna at all. Mia, of course, could not have cared less. She stumbled on her feet a little, reeled a little, had to wave one hand, the one holding her driver's license, for balance. There was a moment when she thought she might tumble to the floor, and then she was okay again.
"Ma'am?"
the desk clerk inquired, looking remotely, very remotely concerned.
"Are you feeling all right?"
"Yeah," Susanna said, "only lost my balance there for a second or two." Wondering what in the blue hell just happened. Oh, but she knew the answer. Mia was the one with the legs. Mia. Susanna had been driving the bus ever since encountering old Mr. May I Not Take the Sholpada, and this body was starting to revert to its legless below-the-knee state. Crazy, but true. Her body was going Susanna on her. "Mia, get up here. Take charge."
"I can't. Not yet. As soon as we're alone, I will."
And dear Christ, Susanna recognized that tone of voice, recognized it very well. The bitch was shy. To the desk clerk, Susanna said, "What's this thing? Is it a key?"
"Why, yes, Si. You use it in the elevator as well as to open your room. Just push it into the slot in the direction the arrows point. Remove it briskly. When the light on the door turns green, you may enter. I have slightly over $8,000 in my cash drawer. I'll give it all to you for your pretty thing, your turtle, your sholpada, your tortuga, your kavit, your..."
"No," Susanna said, and staggered again. She clutched the edge of the desk. Her equilibrium was shot. "I'm going upstairs now." She'd meant to visit the gift shop first, and spend some of Matz's dough on a clean shirt, if they carried such things. But that would have to wait. Everything would have to wait.
"Yes, Si."
No more ma'am, not now. The turtle was working on her, sanding away the gap between the worlds. "You just forget you saw me, all right?"
"Yes, Si. Shall I put a do not disturb on the phone?"
Mia clamored. Susanna didn't even bother paying attention. "No, don't do that. I'm expecting a call."
"As you like, Si. Eyes on the turtle. Ever on the turtle. Enjoy the Plaza Park. Would you like a bellman to assist you with your bags?"
"Look like I need help with these three pukey little things," Detta thought. But Susanna only shook her head.
"Very well."
Susanna started to turn away, but the desk clerk's next words swung her back in a hurry.
"Soon comes the king. He of the eye."
Susanna gaped at the woman, her surprise close to shock. She felt goose flesh crawling up her arms. The desk clerk's beautiful face, meanwhile, remained placid. Dark eyes on the scrimshaw turtle, lips parted, now damp with spittle as well as gloss. "If I stay here much longer," Susanna thought, "she'll start to drool." Susanna very much wanted to pursue the business of the king and the eye. It was her business, and she could. She was the one up front and driving the bus. But she staggered again and knew she couldn't unless
that was. She wanted to crawl to the elevator on her hands and knees, with the empty lower legs of her jeans trailing up behind her. Maybe later, she thought, knowing that was unlikely. Things were moving too fast now. She started across the lobby, walking with an educated stagger. The desk clerk spoke after her in a voice expressing pleasant regret, no more than that. "When the king comes and the tower falls, Sai, all such pretty things as yours will be broken. Then there will be darkness and nothing but the howl of Discordia and the cries of the Cantoi." Susanna made no reply. Although the goose flesh was now all the way up the nape of her neck, and she could feel her scalp tightening on her very skull. Her legs, someone's legs anyway, were rapidly losing all feeling. If she'd been able to look at her bare skin, would she have seen her fine new legs going transparent? Would she have been able to see the blood flowing through her veins, bright red going down, darker and exhausted heading back up to her heart? The interwoven pigtails of muscle? She thought yes. She pushed the up button, and then put the Oriza back into its bag. Praying one of the three elevator doors would open before she collapsed. The piano player had switched to Stormy Weather. The door of the middle car opened. Susanna Mia stepped in and pushed 19. The door slid shut, but the car went nowhere. "The plastic card," she reminded herself. "You have to use the card." She saw the slot and slid the card into it, being careful to push in the direction of the arrows. This time when she pushed 19, the number lit up. A moment later she was shoved rudely aside as Mia came forward. Susanna subsided at the back of her own mind with a kind of tired relief. Yes, let someone else take over, why not? Let someone else drive the bus for a while. She could feel the strength and substance coming back into her legs, and that was enough for now. 5. Mia might have been a stranger in a strange land, but she was a fast learner. In the 19th floor lobby, she located the arrow with 1911 to 1923 beneath it and walked briskly down the corridor to 1919. The carpet, some thick green stuff that was delightfully soft, whispered beneath her, "There, stolen shoes." She inserted the key card, opened the door, and stepped in. There were two beds. She put the bags on one of them, looked around without much interest, then fixed her gaze on the telephone. "Susanna!" Impatient. "What? How do I make it ring?" Susanna laughed with genuine amusement. "Honey, you aren't the first person to ask that question, believe me, or the millionth. It either will or it won't, in its own good time. Meanwhile, why don't you have a look around? See if you can't find a place to store your gunna." She expected an argument, but didn't get one. Mia prowled the room, not bothering to open the drapes, although Susanna very much wanted to see the city from this height, peeked into the bathroom, palatial, with what looked like a marble basin and mirrors everywhere, then looked into the closet. Here, sitting on a shelf with some plastic bags for dry cleaning on top, was a safe. There was a sign on it, but Mia couldn't read it. Roland had had similar problems from time to time, but his had been caused by the difference between the English language alphabet and Inworld's great letters. Susanna had an idea that Mia's problems were a lot more basic, although her kidnapper clearly knew numbers. Susanna didn't think the chap's mother could read at all. Susanna came forward, but not all the way. For a moment she was looking through two sets of eyes at two signs, the sensation so peculiar that it made her feel nauseated. Then the images came together and she could read the message. "This safe is provided for your personal belongings. The management of the Plaza Park Hyatt assumes no responsibility for items left here. Cash and jewelry should be deposited in the hotel safe downstairs. To set code, punch in 4 numbers plus enter. To open, enter your 4-number code and push open." Susanna retired and let Mia select 4 numbers. They turned out to be a 1 and 3 nines. It was the current year and might be one of the first combinations a room burglar would try, but at least it wasn't quite the room number itself. Besides, they were the right numbers, numbers of power, a sigil. They both knew it.
Mia tried the safe after programming it, found it locked tightly, then followed the directions for opening it. There was a whirring noise from somewhere inside, and the door popped ajar. She put in the faded red Midtown Lanes bag, the box inside just fit on the shelf, and then the bag of Oriza plates. She closed and locked the safe's door again, tried the handle, found it tight, and nodded. The boarder's bag was still on the bed. She took the wad of cash out of it and tucked it into the right front pocket of her jeans, along with the turtle. "Have to get a clean shirt," Susanna reminded her unwelcome guest. Mia, daughter of none, made no reply. She clearly cared bupkis for shirts, clean or dirty. Mia was looking at the telephone. For the time being, with her labor on hold, the phone was all she cared about. "Now we palaver," Susanna said. "You promised, and it's a promise you're going to keep. But not in that banquet room." She shuddered. "Somewhere outside, hear me, I beg. I want fresh air. That banqueting hall smelled of death." Mia didn't argue. Susanna got a vague sense of the other woman riffling through various files of memory, examining, rejecting, examining, rejecting, and at last finding something that would serve. "How do we go there?" Mia asked indifferently. The black woman, who was now two women, again sat on one of the beds and folded her hands in her lap. "Like on a sled," the woman's Susanna part said. "I'll push, you steer, and remember, Susanna mio, if you want my cooperation, you give me some straight answers."
"I will," the other replied. "Just don't expect to like them, or even understand them."
"What do you—"
"Never mind. Gods, I never met anyone who could ask so many questions. Time is short. When the telephone rings, our palaver ends, so if you'd palaver at all—"
Susanna didn't bother giving her a chance to finish. She closed her eyes and let herself fall back. No bed stopped that fall. She went right through it. She was falling for real, falling through space. She could hear the jangle of the Todash chimes, dim and far.
"Here I go again," she thought. "And, Eddie, I love you."
Stave. "Kamala Jin Jive, ain't it grand to be alive, to look out on Discordia when the demon moon arrives?" Response. "Kamala come five, even when the shadows rise, to see the world and walk the world makes you glad to be alive."
Sixth stanza. The Castle Allure. One. All at once she was falling into her body again, and the sensation provoked a memory of blinding brilliance. Odetta Holmes at 16, sitting on her bed in her slip, sitting in a brilliant bar of sun and pulling up a silk stocking. For the moment this memory held. She could smell White Shoulders perfume, and Pond's Beauty Bar, her mother's soap, and her mother's borrowed perfume. So grown up to be allowed perfume. And she thought, "It's the spring hop. I'm going with Nathan Freeman." Then it was gone. The sweet smell of pond soap was replaced by a clean and cold, but somehow dank, night breeze, and all that remained was that sense so queer and perfect of stretching into a new body as if it were a stocking one was pulling up over one's calf and knee. She opened her eyes. The wind gusted, blowing a fine grit in her face. She squinted against it, grimacing and raising an arm as if she might have to ward off a blow. "Over here," a woman's voice called. It wasn't the voice Susanna would have expected, not strident, not a triumphant caw. "Over here, out of the wind." She looked and saw a tall and comely woman beckoning to her. Susanna's first look at Mia in the flesh astounded her, because the chap's mother was white. Apparently Odetta that was, now had a Caucasian side to her personality, and how that must frost Detta Walker's racially sensitive butt. She herself was legless again, and sitting in a kind of rude one-person cart. It had been parked at a notch in a low parapet wall. She looked out at the most fearsome, forbidding stretch of countryside she had ever seen in her life. Huge rock formations sawed at the sky and jostled into the distance. They glistened like alien bone beneath the glare of a savage sickle moon. Away from the glare of that lunar grin, a billion stars burned like hot ice. Amid the rocks with their broken edges and gaping crevices, a single narrow path wound into the distance. Looking at it, Susanna thought that a party would have to travel that path in single file, and bring plenty of supplies. No mushrooms to pick along the way, no pokeberries either. And in the distance, dim and baleful, its source somewhere over the horizon, a dark crimson light waxed and waned. Heart of the Rose, she thought, and then, no, not that. Forge of the King. She looked at the pulsing, sullen light with helpless, horrified fascination. Flex and loosen. Wax and wane. An infection announcing itself to the sky. "Come to me now, if you'd come at all, Susanna of New York," said Mia. She was dressed in a heavy serape and what looked like leather pants that stopped just below the knee. Her shins were scabbed and scratched. She wore thick-soled huaraches on her feet. "For the king can fascinate, even at a distance. We're on the Discordia side of the castle. Would you like to end your life on the needles at the foot of this wall? If he fascinates you and tells you to jump, you'll do just that. Your bossy gunslinger men aren't here to help you now, are they? Nay, nay, you're on your own, so you are." Susanna tried to pull her gaze from that steadily pulsing glow, and at first couldn't do it. Panic bloomed in her mind. "If he fascinates you and tells you to jump." And she seized it as a tool, compressing it to an edge with which to cut through her frightened immobility. For a moment nothing happened. And then she threw herself backward so violently in the shabby little cart that she had to clutch the edge in order to keep herself from tumbling to the cobbles. The wind gusted again, blowing stone, dust, and grit against her face and into her hair, seeming to mock her. But that pull, fascination, glamour, whatever it had been, it was gone. She looked at the dog cart, so she thought it, whether that was the right name or not, and saw at once how it worked. Simple enough, too. With no mule to draw it, she was the mule. It was miles from the sweet, light little chair they'd found in Topeka, and light years from being able to walk on the strong legs that had conveyed her from the little park to the hotel. God, she missed having legs. Missed it already. But you made do. She seized hold of the cart's wooden wheels, strained, produced no movement, strained harder. Just as she was deciding she'd have to get out of the chair and hop-crawl her ignominious way to where Mia waited, the wheels turned with a groaning, oil-less creak. She rumbled toward Mia, who was standing behind a squat stone pillar. There were a great many of these, marching away into the dark along a curve. Susanna supposed that once upon a time, before the world had moved on, archers would have stood behind them for protection while the assaulting army fired their arrows or red-hot catapults or whatever you call them. Then they'd step into the gaps and fire their own weapons. How long ago had that been? What world was this? And how close to the Dark Tower? Susanna had an idea it might be very close indeed. She pushed the balky, gawky, protesting cart out of the wind and looked at the woman in the serape, ashamed to be so out of breath after moving less than a dozen yards, but unable to help panting. She drew down deep breaths of the dank and somehow stony air. The pillars, she had an idea they were called Merlins or something like that, were on her right. On her left was a circular pool of darkness surrounded by crumbling stone walls. Across the way, two towers rose high above the outer wall, but one had been shattered, as if by lightning or some powerful explosive. "This where we stand is the Allure," Mia said, "the wall walk of the castle on the abyss, once known as Castle Discordia. You said you wanted fresh air. I hope this does you, as they say in the Kala. This is far beyond there, Susanna. This is deep in End World, near the place where your quest ends, for good or for ill." She paused and then said, "For ill, almost surely.
Yet I care nothing for that. No, not I. I am Mia, daughter of none, mother of one. I care for my chap and nothing more. Chap be enough for me, aye. Would you palaver? Fine, I'll tell you what I may and be true. Why not? What is it to me, one way or the other?
Susanna looked around. When she faced in toward the center of the castle, what she supposed was the courtyard, she caught an aroma of ancient rot. Mia saw her wrinkle her nose and smiled.
Aye, they're long gone. And the machines, the later ones left behind, are mostly stilled, but the smell of their dying lingers, doesn't it? The smell of death always does. Ask your friend, the gunslinger, the true gunslinger. He knows, for he's dealt his share of it. He is responsible for much, Susanna of New York. The guilt of worlds hangs around his neck like a rotting corpse. Yet he's gone far enough with his dry and lusty determination to finally draw the eyes of the great. He will be destroyed, aye, and all those who stand with him. I carry his doom in my own belly, and I care not.
Her chin jutted forward in the starlight. Beneath the serape her breasts heaved, and Susanna saw her belly curved. In this world, at least, Mia was very clearly pregnant. Ready to burst, in fact.
Ask your questions. Have at me, Mia said. Just remember, we exist in the other world, too. The one where we're bound together. We're lying on a bed in the inn as if asleep. But we don't sleep, do we, Susanna? Nay. And when the telephone rings, when my friends call, we leave this place and go to them. If your questions have been asked and answered, fine. If not, that's also fine. Ask. Or... are you not a gunslinger?
Her lips curved in a disdainful smile. Susanna thought she was pert, yes, pert indeed. Especially for someone who wouldn't be able to find her way from 46th Street to 47th in the world they had to go back to.
So, shoot, I should say.
Susanna looked once more into the darkened, broken well that was the castle's soft center, where lay its keeps and lists, its barbicans and murder holes, its God knew what. She had taken a course in medieval history and knew some of the terms, but that had been long ago. Surely there was a banqueting hall somewhere down there? One that she herself had supplied with food, at least for a while. But her catering days were done. If Mia tried to push her too hard or too far, she'd find that out for herself. Meantime, she thought she'd start with something relatively easy.
If this is the castle on the abyss, she said, where's the abyss?
I don't see anything out that way except for a minefield of rocks and that red glow on the horizon. Mia, her shoulder-length black hair flying out behind her, not a bit of kink in that hair as there was in Susanna's. Mia's was like silk, pointed across the inner chasm below them to the far wall where the towers rose and the allure continued its curve.
This is the inner keep, she said. Beyond it is the village of Fedic, now deserted, all dead of the Red Death 1,000 years ago and more. Beyond that...
The Red Death? Susanna asked, startled, also frightened in spite of herself.
Poe's Red Death? Like in the story?
And why not? Hadn't they already wandered into and then back out of L. Frank Baum's Oz? What came next? The White Rabbit and the Red Queen?
Lady, I know not. All I can tell you is that beyond the deserted village is the outer wall, and beyond the outer wall is a great crack in the earth filled with monsters that cousin, diddle, increase, and plot to escape. Once there was a bridge across, but it fell long ago, in the time before counting, as 'tis said. There are horrors that might drive an ordinary man or woman mad at a glance.
She favored Susanna with a glance of her own, a decidedly satiric one.
But not a gunslinger. Surely not one such as thee.
Why do you mock me? Susanna asked quietly. Mia looked startled, then grim.
Was it my idea to come here? To stand in this miserable cold where the king's eye dirties the horizon and sullies the very cheek of the moon with its filthy light? Nay, lady, 'twas you. So harry me not with your tongue.
Susanna could have responded, that it hadn't been her idea to catch Preg with a demon's baby in the first place, but this would be a terrible time to get into one of those yes-you-did-no-I-didn't squabbles.
I wasn't scolding, Susanna said, only asking.
Mia made an impatient shooing gesture with her hand as if to say, don't split hairs, and half turned away. Under her breath she said, I didn't go to Morehouse or No House. And in any case, I'll bear my chap, do you hear? Whichever way the cards fall, bear him and feed him.
All at once, Susanna understood a great deal. Mia mocked because she was afraid. In spite of all she knew, so much of her was Susanna.
I didn't go to Morehouse or No House, for instance. That was from Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. When Mia had bought into Susanna, she had purchased at least two personalities for the price of one. It was Mia, after all, who'd brought Detta out of retirement, or perhaps deep hibernation, and it was Detta who was particularly fond of that line which expressed so much of the Negro's deep-held disdain for and suspicion of what was sometimes called the finer post-war Negro education. Not to Morehouse or No House. I know what I know. In other words, I heard it through the grapevine. I got it on the Erie, dearie. I picked it up on the Jungle Telegraph.
Mia, she said now. Whose chap is it besides yours? What demon was his father, do you know?
Mia grinned. It wasn't a grin Susanna liked. There was too much Detta in it. Too much laughing, bitter knowledge.
Aye, lady, I know. And you're right, it was a demon got him on you. A very great demon indeed, say true. A human one. It had to have been so, for know you that true demons, those left on the shore, these worlds which spin around the tower when the prim receded, are sterile, and for a very good reason.
Then how? Your Din is the father of my chap, Mia said.
Roland of Gilead, aye, he. Stephen Deschaine finally has his grandson, although he lies rotten in his grave and knows it not.
Susanna was goggling at her, unmindful of the cold wind rushing out of the Discordia wilderness.
Roland, it can't be. He was beside me when the demon was in me. He was pulling Jake through from the house on Dutch Hill, and fucking was the last thing on his mind.
She trailed off, thinking of the baby she'd seen in the Dogon, thinking of those eyes, those blue bombardier's eyes.
No. No, I refuse to believe it. All the same, Roland is his father,
Mia insisted.
And when the chap comes, I shall name him from your own mind, Susanna of New York, from what you learned at the same time you learned of Merlins and courtyards and trebuchets and barbicans. Why not? 'Tis a good name and fair.
Professor Murray's Introduction to Medieval History. That's what she's talking about.
I will name him Mordred, said she. He'll grow quickly, my darling boy, quicker than human after his demon nature. He'll grow strong, the avatar of every gunslinger that ever was. And so, like the Mordred of your tale, will he slay his father.
And with that, Mia, daughter of none, raised her arms to the star-shot sky and screamed, although whether in sorrow, terror, or joy, Susanna could not tell. 2.
Hunker, Mia said. I have this.
From beneath her serape she produced a bundle of grapes and a paper sack filled with orange pokeberries as swollen as her belly. Where, Susanna wondered, had the fruit come from? Was their shared body sleepwalking back in the Plaza Park Hotel? Had there perhaps been a fruit basket she hadn't noticed? Or were these the fruits of pure imagination? Not that it mattered. Any appetite she might have had was gone, robbed by Mia's claim. The fact that it was impossible somehow only added to the monstrosity of the idea, and she couldn't stop thinking of the baby she'd seen in utero on one of those TV screens, those blue eyes.
No, it can't be, do you hear? It cannot be.
The wind coming through the notches between the Merlins was chilling her to the bone. She swung off the seat of the cart and settled herself against the Allure wall beside Mia, listening to the wind's constant whine and looking up at the alien stars. Mia was cramming her mouth with grapes. Juice ran from one corner of her mouth while she spat seeds from the other corner with the rapidity of machine gun bullets. She swallowed, wiped her chin, and said, "It can. It can be, and more, it is." "Are you still glad you came, Susanna of New York? Or do you wish you'd left your curiosity unsatisfied?" "If I'm going to have a baby I didn't hump for, I'm going to know everything about that baby that I can. Do you understand that?" Mia blinked at the deliberate crudity, then nodded. "If you like. Tell me how it can be Roland's. And if you want me to believe anything you tell me, you better start by making me believe this." Mia dug her fingernails into the skin of a pokeberry, stripped it away in one quick gesture, and ate the fruit down greedily. She considered opening another, then simply rolled it between her palms, those disconcertingly white palms, warming it. After enough of this, Susanna knew, the fruit would split its skin on its own. Then she began. 3. "How many beams do there be, Susanna of New York?"
6,
Susanna said. "At least there were. I guess now there are only 2 that..." Mia waved a hand impatiently, as if to say, "Don't waste my time."
6, aye. "And when the beams were created out of that greater discordia, the soup of creation, some, including the Manny, call the over and some call the prim, what made them?"
"I don't know," Susanna said. "Was it God, do you think?"
"Perhaps there is a God, but the beams rose from the prim on the airs of magic, Susanna. The true magic which passed long ago. Was it God that made magic, or was it magic that made God? I know not. It's a question for philosophers, and mothering's my job. But once upon a time, all was discordia, and from it, strong and all crossing at a single unifying point, came the 6 beams. There was magic to hold them steady for eternity. But when the magic left from all there is but the Dark Tower, which some have called Can Calix, the Hall of Resumption, men despaired. When the age of magic passed, the age of machines came."
"North Central Positronics," Susanna murmured. "Dipolar computers. Slow trans engines." She paused. "Blaine the Mono. But not in our world."
"No? Do you say your world is exempt? What about the sign in the hotel lobby?"
The pokeberry popped. Mia stripped it and gobbled it, drizzling juice through a knowing grin. "I had an idea you couldn't read," Susanna said. This was beside the point, but it was all she could think of to say. Her mind kept returning to the image of the baby, to those brilliant blue eyes. Gunslinger's eyes.
"Aye, but I know my numbers. And when it comes to your mind, I read very well. Do you say you don't recall the sign in the hotel lobby? Would you tell me that?"
Of course she remembered. According to the sign, the Plaza Park would be part of an organization called Sombra North Central in just another month. And when she'd said, "not in our world," of course she had been thinking of 1964. The world of black-and-white television, absurdly bulky, room-sized computers, and Alabama cops more than willing to sick the dogs on black marchers for voting rights. Things had changed greatly in the intervening 35 years. The Eurasian desk clerk's combination TV and typewriter, for instance. How did Susanna know that wasn't a dipolar computer run by some form of slow trans engine? She did not. "Go on," she told Mia. Mia shrugged. "You doom yourselves, Susanna. You seem positively bent on it, and the root is always the same. Your faith fails you, and you replace it with rational thought. But there is no love in thought. Nothing that lasts in deduction. Only death in rationalism."
"What does this have to do with your chap?"
"I don't know. There's much I don't know." She raised a hand, forestalling Susanna before Susanna could speak. "And no, I'm not playing for time or trying to lead you away from what you'd know. I'm speaking as my heart tells me. Would you hear or not?"
Susanna nodded, She'd hear this, for a little longer at least. But if it didn't turn back to the baby soon, she'd turn it back in that direction herself. The magic went away. Merlin retired to his cave in one world, the sword of Eld gave way to the pistols of the gunslingers in another, and the magic went away. And across the arc of years, great alchemists, great scientists, and great, what, technicians, I think? Great men of thought, anyway, that's what I mean, great men of deduction, these came together and created the machines which ran the beams. They were great machines, but they were mortal machines. They replaced the magic with machines, do you ken it? And now the machines are failing. In some worlds, great plagues have decimated whole populations. Susanna nodded. We saw one of those, she said quietly. They called it the superflu. The Crimson King's breakers are only hurrying along a process that's already in train. The machines are going mad. You've seen this for yourself. The men believed there would always be more men like them to make more machines. None of them foresaw what's happened. This universal exhaustion. The world has moved on. Aye, lady, it has, and left no one to replace the machines which hold up the last magic in creation. For the prim has receded long since. The magic is gone. And the machines are failing. Soon enough the Dark Tower will fall. Perhaps there'll be time for one splendid moment of universal, rational thought before the darkness rules forever. Wouldn't that be nice? Won't the Crimson King be destroyed too, when the tower falls? Him and all his crew? The guys with the bleeding holes in their foreheads? He has been promised his own kingdom. Where he'll rule forever, tasting his own special pleasures. Distaste had crept into Mia's voice. Fear, too, perhaps. Promised? Promised by whom? Who is more powerful than he? Lady, I know not. Perhaps this is only what he has promised himself. Mia shrugged. Her eyes wouldn't quite meet Susanna's. Can nothing prevent the fall of the tower? Not even your gunslinger friend hopes to prevent it, Mia said, only to slow it down by freeing the breakers and, perhaps, slaying the Crimson King. Save it. Save it. Oh, delight. Did he ever tell you that was his quest? Susanna considered this and shook her head. If Roland had ever said that in so many words, she couldn't remember. And she was sure she would have. No, Mia went on. For he won't lie to his quartet unless he has to. 'Tis his pride. What he wants of the tower is only to see it. Then she added, rather grudgingly, oh, perhaps to enter it. And climb to the room at the top, his ambition may strike so far. He may dream of standing on its allure as we hunker on this one, and chant the names of his fallen comrades and of his line all the way back to Arthur Eld. But save it? No, good lady. Only a return of the magic could possibly save it, and, as you yourself well know, your din deals only in lead. Never since crossing the worlds had Susanna heard Roland's trade of hand cast in such a paltry light. It made her feel sad and angry, but she hid her feelings as best she could. Tell me how your chap can be Roland's son, for I would hear. Ah, 'tis a good trick. But one the old people of River Crossing could have explained to you, I've no doubt. Susanna started at that. How do you know so much of me? Because you are possessed, Mia said, and I am your possessor, sure. I can look through any of your memories that I like. I can read what your eyes see. Now be quiet and listen if you would learn, for I sense our time has grown short. 4. This is what Susanna's demon told her. There are 6 beams, as you did say, but there are 12 guardians, one for each end of each beam. This, for we're still on it, is the beam of Shardik. Were you to go beyond the tower, it would become the beam of Maturin, the great turtle upon whose shell the world rests. Similarly, there are but 6 demon elementals, 1 for each beam. Below them is the whole invisible world, those creatures left behind on the beach of existence when the Prim receded. There are speaking demons, demons of house, which some call ghosts, ill-sick demons, which some, makers of machines and worshippers of the great false god rationality, if it does you, call disease. Many small demons, but only 6 demon elementals. Yet as there are 12 guardians for the 6 beams, there are 12 demon aspects, for each demon elemental is both male and female. Susanna began to see where this was going, and felt a sudden sinking in her guts. From the naked bristle of rocks beyond the allure, in what Mia called the Discordia, there came a dry, feverish cackle of laughter. This unseen humorist was joined by a second, a third, a fourth, and 5th. Suddenly, it seemed that the whole world was laughing at her. And perhaps with good reason, for it was a good joke. But how could she have known? As the hyenas, or whatever they were, cackled, she said, "You're telling me that the demon elementals are hermaphrodites. That's why they're sterile, because they're both. I, in the place of the oracle, your din had intercourse with one of these demon elementals in order to gain information, what's called prophecy in the high speech. He had no reason to think the oracle was anything but a succubus, such as those that sometimes exist in the lonely places." "Right," Susanna said, "just a run-of-the-mill demon sexpot."
"If you like," Mia said.
And this time when she offered Susanna a pokeberry, Susanna took it and began to roll it between her palms, warming the skin. She still wasn't hungry, but her mouth was dry. So dry. "The demon took the gunslinger's seed as female and gave it back to you as male." "When we were in the speaking ring," Susanna said dismally. She was remembering how the pouring rain had pounded against her upturned face, the sense of invisible hands on her shoulders, and then the thing's engorgement filling her up and at the same time seeming to tear her apart. The worst part had been the coldness of the enormous cock inside her. At the time, she thought it was like being fucked by an icicle. And how had she gotten through it? By summoning Detta, of course. By calling on the bitch, victor in 100 nasty little sex skirmishes fought in the parking lots of 2 dozen roadhouses and county-line honky-tonks. Detta, who had trapped it. "It tried to get away," she told Mia. "Once it figured out it had its cock caught in a damn Chinese finger-puller, it tried to get away." "If it had wanted to get away," Mia said quietly, "it would have." "Why would it bother fooling me?" Susanna asked, but she didn't need Mia to answer that question, not now. "Because it had needed her, of course. It had needed her to carry the baby. Roland's baby. Roland's doom." "You know everything you need to know about the chap," Mia said, "don't you?" Susanna supposed she did. A demon had taken in Roland's seed while female, had stored it somehow, and then shot it into Susanna Dina's mail. Mia was right. She knew what she needed to know. "I've kept my promise," Mia said. "Let's go back. The cold's not good for the chap." "Just a minute longer," Susanna said. She held up the pokeberry. Golden fruit now bulged through ruptures in the orange skin. "My berry just popped. Let me eat it. I have another question. Eat and ask, and be quick about both. Who are you? Who are you really? Are you this demon? Does she have a name, by the way? She and he, do they have a name?" "No," Mia said. "Elementals have no need of names. They are what they are. Am I a demon? Is that what you'd know? Yar, I suppose I am, or I was. All that is vague now, like a dream. And you're not me. Or are you?" Mia didn't answer, and Susanna realized that she probably didn't know. Mia, low, musing, Mia was hunkering against the Merlin with a serape tucked between her knees. Susanna could see that her ankles were swollen and felt a moment's pity for the woman. Then she squashed it. This was no time for pity, for there was no truth in it. "You ain't nothing but the babysitter girl." The reaction was all she'd hoped for and more. Mia's face registered shock, then anger, hell, fury.
"You lie. I'm this chap's mother. And when he comes, Susanna, there will be no more combing the world for breakers, for my chap will be the greatest of them all, able to break both of the remaining beams all by himself."
Her voice had filled with pride that sounded alarmingly close to insanity.
"My Mordred, do you hear me?"
"Oh, yes," Susanna said, "I hear. And you're actually going to go trotting right to those who've made it their business to pull down the tower, aren't you? They call you come."
She paused, then finished with deliberate softness. "And when you get to them, they'll take your chap, and thank you very much, and then send you back into the soup you came from."
"Nay, I shall have the raising of him, for so they have promised."
Mia crossed her arms protectively over her belly.
"He's mine. I'm his mother, and I shall have the raising of him." "Girl, why don't you get real? Do you think they'll keep their word, them? How can you see so much and not see that?"
Susanna knew the answer, of course. Motherhood itself had deluded her.
"Why would they not let me raise him?" Mia asked shrilly. "Who better? Who better than Mia, who was made for only two things, to bear a son and raise him?"
"But you're not just you," Susanna said. "You're like the children of the Kala, and just about everything else my friends and I have run into along the way. You're a twin, Mia. I'm your other half, your lifeline. You see the world through my eyes and breathe through my lungs. I had to carry the chap because you couldn't, could you? You're as sterile as the big boys, and once they've got your kid, their A-bomb of a breaker, they'll get rid of you if only so they can get rid of me."
"I have their promise," she said.
Her face was downcast, set in its stubbornness.
"Turn it around," Susanna said. "Turn it around, I beg. If I were in your place and you in mine, what would you think if I spoke of such a promise?
I'd tell you to stop your blabbering tongue."
"Who are you, really? Where in the hell did they get you? Was it like a newspaper ad you answered? Surrogate mother wanted, good benefits, short term of employment? Who are you, really?"
"Shut up!"
Susanna leaned forward on her haunches. This position was ordinarily exquisitely uncomfortable for her, but she'd forgotten both her discomfort and the half-eaten pokeberry in her hand.
"Come on," she said, her voice taking on the rasping tones of Detta Walker. "Come on and take off your blindfold, honey bunch, just like you made me take off mine. Tell the truth and spit in the devil's eye. Who the fuck are you?"
"I don't know," Mia screamed.
And below them the jackals hidden in the rocks screamed back. Only their screams were laughter.
"I don't know. I don't know who I am. Does that satisfy?"
It did not. And Susanna was about to press on and press harder when Detta Walker spoke up. 5. This is what Susanna's other demon told her.
"Baby doll, you need to think about this a little, seem to me. She can't, she's stone dumb, can't read, can't cipher more than just a little, ain't been to Morehouse, ain't been to no house. But you have, Miss Odetta Holmes, been to Columbia, la-di-da, the gem of the ocean, ain't we just so fine? You need to think about how she pregnant, for one thing. She say she done fucked Roland out of his jizz, then turned male into the demon of the ring and shot it into you, and then you carrying it, you tossing all those nasty things she made you eat down your throat. So where's she in all this now? That or Detta like to know. How come she's sitting there pregnant under that greaser blanket she wearing? Is it more that, what you call it, visualization technique?"
Susanna didn't know. She only knew that Mia was looking at her with suddenly narrowed eyes. She was doubtless picking up some of this monologue. How much? Not much at all, that was Susanna's bet. Maybe a word here and there, but mostly it was just quack. And in any case, Mia certainly acted like the baby's mother. Baby Mordred. It was like a Charles Adams cartoon.
"That she do," Dead amused. She act like a mommy. She wrapped around it root and branch. You right about that much.
But maybe, Susanna thought, that was just her nature. Maybe once you got beyond the mothering instinct, there was no Mia.
A cold hand reached out and seized Susanna's wrist.
Who is it? Is it that nasty talking one? If it is, banish her. She scares me.
She still scared Susanna a little, in all truth, but not as much as when she'd first come to accept that Detta was real. They hadn't become friends and probably never would, but it was clear that Detta Walker could be a powerful ally. She was more than mean. Once you got past the idiotic Butterfly McQueen accent, she was shrewd.
This Mia make a mighty powerful ally her own self. If you could get her on your side, ain't hardly nothing in the world as powerful as a pissed-off mommy.
We're going back, Mia said. I've answered your questions. The cold's bad for the baby. And the mean one's here. Palaver's done.
But Susanna shook off her grip and moved back a little, out of Mia's immediate reach. In the gap between the Merlins, the cold wind knifed through her light shirt, but it also seemed to clear her mind and refresh her thinking. Part of her is me, because she has access to my memories. Eddie's ring, the people of River Crossing, Blaine, the Mono, but she's got to be more than me as well, because...
Go on, girl, you ain't doing bad, but you slow.
Because she knows all this other stuff as well. She knows about the demons, both the little ones and the elementals. She knows how the beams came into being, sort of. And about this magical soup of creation, the Prim. As far as I ever knew, Prim's a word you use for girls who are always yanking their skirts down over their knees. She didn't get that other meaning from me.
It occurred to her what this conversation was like. Parents studying their new baby. Their new chap. He's got your nose, yes, but he's got your eyes, and, but my goodness, where did he get that hair?
Detta said,
And she also got friends back in New York. Don't forget that. At least she want to think they're her friends.
So she's someone or something else as well. Someone from the invisible world of house demons and ill six. But who? Is she really one of the elementals?
Detta laughed.
She say so, but she lying about that, sugar. I know she is.
Then what is she? What was she before she was Mia? All at once a phone, amplified to almost ear-splitting shrillness, began to ring. It was so out of place on this abandoned castle tower that at first Susanna didn't know what it was. The things out there in the Discordia, jackals, hyenas, whatever they were, had been subsiding, but with the advent of this sound, they began to cackle and shriek again. Mia, daughter of none, mother of Mordred, knew that ringing for what it was immediately, however. She came forward. Susanna at once felt this world waver and lose its reality. It seemed almost to freeze and become something like a painting. Not a very good one, either.
No, she shouted, and threw herself at Mia. But Mia, pregnant or not, scratched up or not, swollen ankles or no swollen ankles, overpowered her easily.
Roland had shown them several hand-to-hand tricks. The Detta part of her had crowed with delight at the nastiness of them. But they were useless against Mia. She parried each before Susanna had done more than get started.
Sure, yes, of course, she knows your tricks, just like she knows about Aunt Talitha in River Crossing and Topsy the Sailor in Lud, because she has access to your memories, because she is, at least to some extent, you.
And here her thoughts ended, because Mia had twisted her arms up behind her, and oh, dear God, the pain was enormous.
Ain't you just the most babyish cunt?
Detta said with a kind of genial, panting contempt. And before Susanna could reply, an amazing thing happened. The world ripped open like a brittle piece of paper. This rip extended from the dirty cobbles of the Allure's floor to the nearest Merlin and then on up into the sky. It raced into that star-shot firmament and tore the crescent moon in two. There was a moment for Susanna to think that this was it. One or both of the final two beams had snapped and the tower had fallen. Then, through the rip, she saw two women lying on one of the twin beds in room 1919 of the Plaza Park Hotel. Their arms were around each other, and their eyes were shut. They were dressed in identical blood-stained shirts and blue jeans. Their features were the same, but one had legs below the knee,
and straight silky hair and white skin.
"Don't you mess with me,"
Mia panted in her ear. Susanna could feel a fine, tickling spray of saliva.
"Don't you mess with me, or with my chap, because I'm stronger, do you hear? I'm stronger."
There was no doubt about that, Susanna thought as she was propelled toward the widening hole, at least for now. She was pushed through the rip in reality. For a moment her skin seemed simultaneously on fire and coated with ice. Somewhere the toad ash chimes were ringing, and then...
6.
She sat up on the bed. One woman, not two, but at least one with legs. Susanna was shoved, reeling, to the back, Mia in charge now, Mia reaching for the phone, at first getting it wrong way up and then reversing it. "Hello? Hello?"
"Hello, Mia. My name is..."
She overrode him. "Are you going to let me keep my baby? This bitch inside me says you're not."
There was a pause, first long and then too long. Susanna felt Mia's fear, first a rivulet and then a flood.
"You don't have to feel that way," she tried to tell her. "You're the one with what they want, with what they need. Don't you see that? Hello, are you there? Gods, are you there? Please tell me you're still there."
"I'm here," the man's voice said calmly. "Shall we start again, Mia, daughter of none? Or shall I ring off until you're feeling a little more yourself?"
"No, no, don't do that, don't do that, I beg."
"You won't interrupt me again? Because there's no reason for unseemliness."
"I promise."
"My name is Richard P. Sayre." A name Susanna knew, but from where? "You know where you need to go, don't you?"
"Yes."
Eager now, eager to please.
"The Dixie Pig, 61st and Lexingworth."
"Lexington," Sayre said. "Odetta Holmes can help you find it, I'm sure."
Susanna wanted to scream, "That's not my name." She kept silent instead. This Sayre would like her to scream, wouldn't he? Would like her to lose control.
"Are you there, Odetta?" Pleasantly teasing. "Are you there, you interfering bitch?"
She kept silent. "She's in there," Mia said. "I don't know why she's not answering. I'm not holding her just now."
"Oh, I think I know why," Sayre said indulgently. "She doesn't like that name, for one thing."
Then, in a reference Susanna didn't get,
"Don't call me Clay no more. Clay my slave name. Call me Muhammad Ali. Right, Susanna? Or was that after your time?" "A little after, I think. Sorry. Time can be so confusing, can't it? Never mind. I have something to tell you in a minute, my dear. You won't like it very much, I fear, but I think you should know."
Susanna kept silent. It was getting harder.
"As for the immediate future of your chap, Mia, I'm surprised you'd even feel it necessary to ask," Sayre told her. He was a smoothie, whoever he was, his voice containing exactly the right amount of outrage. "The king keeps his promises. Unlike some I could name. And issues of our integrity aside, think of the practical issues. Who else should have the keeping of perhaps the most important child to ever be born, including Christ, including Buddha, including the Prophet Muhammad? To who else's breast, if I may be crude, would we trust his suck?"
Music to her ears, Susanna thought dismally. All the things she's been thirsting to hear, and why? Because she is mother.
"You'd trust him to me," Mia cried. "Only to me, of course." "Thank you, thank you."
Susanna spoke at last, told her not to trust him, and was of course roundly ignored.
"I'd no more lie to you than break a promise to my own mother," said the voice on the phone.
"Did you ever have one, sugar?"
Detta wanted to know.
"Even though the truth sometimes hurts, lies have a way of coming back to bite us, don't they? The truth of this matter is you won't have your chap for long, Mia. His childhood won't be like that of other children. Normal children."
"I know. Oh, I know."
"But for the 5 years you do have him, or perhaps 7,
It might be as many as 7. He'll have the best of everything. From you, of course, but also from us. Our interference will be minimal. Detta Walker leaped forward, as quick and as nasty as a grease burn. She was only able to take possession of Susanna Dean's vocal